This is a CBC podcast.
Gotta know who's jamming in Studio Q? Want to download a rockin' new Radio 3 podcast? Care to dissect the daily news on a blog by George Strombolopoulos? Find out how online at cbc.ca/entertainment.
Hello and welcome to the Vinyl Cafe podcast. We publish a new podcast every weekend. You can download the latest or subscribe to the Vinyl Cafe podcast at cbc.ca/podcasting. This week on the show, Sam Steels.
Morley, who rarely gets sick, Morley, who hasn't been sick for years, was sitting in a budget meeting at the theater company where she works, about to get sick. Drew, the creative director, was going on and on about the look of the next year's brochure. It's a branding thing, Drew was saying, over and over. And Morley, who had skipped breakfast and had only had an oatmeal cookie for lunch, wasn't paying attention to Drew. Morley was thinking about a little French patisserie down the street, a place where they make chocolate croissant with a hunk of chocolate stuck right in the middle. Drew was going on and on about branding, and Morley was so lost in chocolate longing that she didn't notice the sneeze until it exploded out of her. A sneeze so raw and dramatic, so percussive and impolite, that no one at the table said, "Bless you." Morley, who was so lost in chocolate that she was as surprised as everyone, looked up and saw that everyone was staring at her. "Excuse me," she said, putting the emphasis on the me. Her nose began to run an hour later. Now, there is not much of anything you can do to cure a cold, but with the right drugs, you can do a lot for the symptoms. Morley stopped at Lawler's Drugs on the way home. "This might help," said Doug Lawler, "and it won't make you drowsy." "Thanks," said Morley, but Morley was thinking if she was going to take drugs, she wanted the ones that made you drowsy. She wanted something that came with a warning about operating heavy equipment. And then she remembered that they needed toothpaste, and then she thought maybe shampoo too, or was it conditioner, and so she got both. And then she stopped in front of the toothbrushes, and before long, Morley had an armful of stuff. And that is when her son, Sam, came wheeling around the aisle and almost ran into her. Sam had come into Lawler's to buy gum, which he wasn't supposed to have now that he had braces on his teeth. Sam, who had braces in his mouth and a pack of juicy fruit in his fist, wheeled around the rack of thermometers and spotted his mother just in time. "Holy," he said, backpedaling around the aisle out of sight, thinking as he did, "Holy. Better ditch the juicy fruit and bail." Trying to figure out what he should say if his mother spotted him anyway. And that is when he looked up and spotted her himself in the convex security mirror at the end of the aisle. Except she looked different in the mirror. She didn't look like his mom at all in the mirror. And in that moment, Sam's heart, which had been saying, "Get going, keep moving," lost contact with his feet, and Sam stopped and stared. He'd never come across his mother like this before in a public place without her knowing. And he tried to understand why she looked so different. And it only took a second for him to realize it wasn't her, it was the look on her face. A look he had seen before, but never on his mother. He had seen it on other women like Mrs. Cassidy, the school principal, and that woman who worked at the sub shop who was always rude to him, and Alexander's mother. Alexander's mother looked like this often. Sam felt a wave of emotion wash over him. He didn't know what it was at first, just that he was feeling something big, and then he recognized it as shock. Sam was feeling shocked because he had worked out what looked different about his mom. His mom looked unhappy. And he wanted to get out of there. He wanted to drop the gum and run, but he was mesmerized and he couldn't run. And that was the moment. Sam standing there watching his mother in the security mirror, Morley frustrated and tired and beginning to ache all over. That was the moment when Morley, whose hands were full of boxes and bottles, toothpaste and shampoo and a cold medicine strong enough to knock out a trucker. That was the moment that Morley remembered they were out of toilet paper. The moment she thought, "I need a shopping cart." The moment she began to look around to see if there was one at hand, there wasn't. Morley was looking for a cart for anything to unload or armload, but to Sam it looked as if she was checking to see if anyone was watching her. So Sam, who was, had shrunk back against the shelves, though he didn't take his eyes off the mirror, not for a moment. And what he witnessed next was so outrageous, so beyond the possible, that Sam didn't believe it at first. Because right in front of his eyes, his mother, his sweet, wonderful, unhappy mother, took the bottle of shampoo and slipped it into her coat pocket. Hey, thought Sam, squinting, she didn't just do that. But then she slipped the toothpaste and the toothbrush and the conditioner and the cold pills into her pocket too. Hey, said Sam. It was like watching one of those video surveillance cameras on a cop show. It was like the end of the world. His mother was a thief. Hey, said Sam. And then Morley leaned forward and she picked up the pack of toilet paper. Not toilet paper, said Sam. He said this out loud. It's too big, they'll catch you. And Sam wasn't going to stick around for that. Sam wasn't going to be standing by the front door of Lawler's when the alarm went off and the police came and they took his mother away. Sam took off. So Sam never saw his mother empty her pockets of the cash. Sam never saw Morley pay for everything because Sam was long gone by then. He could barely look at her at supper. He ate quickly, and when he finished, he said, "Excuse me." And then he stood up and he carried his plate to the sink. And when he was halfway there, his father said, "I got a whole box of Chess records today. First Canadian pressings. Howling Wolf. Everything. I got a Howling Wolf album today. It was sealed still." "Sounds like you got a good deal," said his mother, who seemed jittery to Sam. She was fiddling with her hair. "Good deal," said his dad. "It was a steal." Sam dropped his plate. It smashed on the tiled floor, shards of china ricocheting off the cabinets. He was living in a den of thieves. He swept up the pieces of broken plate. "Don't worry," said his mother. She was holding the dustpan while he chased the last line of dust. "Don't worry," said his mother. "There's more where that came from." Sam went to bed early. He felt scared. He felt like a moron. Before bed, Sam had slipped into his sister's room and had gone through her cupboard and he'd gone through her drawers. And in the drawer of her bed table alone, he had found 17 different types of lip gloss. No one in their right mind needed 17 different kinds of lip gloss. Certainly no one would ever buy that many. The whole family was in on it. What had he been thinking all these years? It had been happening right under his nose, and he hadn't noticed a thing. He was a fool. His father owned a secondhand record store. Duh. Where did he think his father got all those used records? And the annual yard sale. Where did all that stuff come from? Sam had never seen half the things his parents hauled out onto the front lawn to sell. He hit the pillow beside him. What a dope, he thought. All these years, Sam had thought his mom was just his mom. He thought he knew her better than anyone in the world. It never occurred to Sam that his mother did things when he wasn't around. He had thought that she worked like his own personal stereo set. He'd always assumed someone pressed pause when he wasn't in the room. Play when he came home. He punched the pillow again. He was a moron. He didn't know anything. His mother had more roles in the world than he had ever imagined. And one of them, apparently, was master criminal. He lay in the darkness. Maybe he didn't know anything about anything. And his head started to spin. He got up to get a drink, and it was only when he caught his reflection in the mirror in the bathroom that another thought occurred to him, a darker thought. How come his parents had brought his sister in on the family business and left him out? There was obviously something wrong with him. In his heart, he knew what he should do. He should make his mother return what she had taken. She should have to hand it over and say she was sorry and promise she'd never do it again. That would cure her. That's what happened to Sam when Aaron White's mother had found a pack of Ganong's chocolates under Aaron's bed. And Aaron had squealed, and Sam's father, Dave, had come into Sam's bedroom and said, "You know, I'm really in the mood for a peppermint cream. You don't happen to know where a fella could get his hands on one at this time of night, do you, hey?" Sam hadn't even stolen the candies. Aaron White had stolen them, but they were hidden in Sam's desk. And Sam had to get out of bed and go to his desk and produce the box of peppermint creams, and they made him take it back. But Sam couldn't bear the thought of turning his own mother in. What if they took her to jail? He told Murphy the next day at school, recess. I saw my mother steal, said Sam. I'm not surprised, said Murphy. Mothers go through difficult stages from time to time. I've seen it before. Your mom, said Sam? Yeah, said Murphy. Stealing, said Sam? Nah, said Murphy. My mom did yoga. What do you think I should do, said Sam? You could blackmail her, said Murphy. You could get all sorts of stuff. At lunch, Murphy had another idea. Crime Stoppers, he said. It's synonymous. They decided to call from a phone booth. That way the call couldn't be traced. The guy who answered sounded like their gym teacher. Sam said, "Someone I know is shoplifting." "Is this one incident or many?" asked the man. "I saw one," said Sam, "but I think it happens all the time." "You saw one," said the man. "That makes you a material witness." Sam said, "I want to remain synonymous." Murphy was punching his shoulder. "Ask if there's a reward," said Murphy. "Ask if there's a reward." "Are you prepared to make a statement?" said the man. Sam's head was spinning. "It's my mother," said Sam. "Your mother?" said the man. "Is she a kleptomaniac?" "No, I think she's from Scarborough," said Sam. "I mean, is she always stealing?" "Maybe," said Sam, "and my dad and my sister, too." It felt good to say it out loud. "This is different," said the man. Your mother could end up with a criminal record if the police are involved. That's not nice. But if you don't do anything, she's going to get caught one day." "What should I do?" whispered Sam. "Listen, this is Crime Stopper," said the man. "This isn't counseling service. You should phone the police and tell them about your mother. Ask them what you should do. They're agencies. She probably needs professional help." By the time he got home from school, Sam felt sick. There was no way he was going to phone the cops. No way he was going to rat out his mother. If he did, it would just prove that his parents had been right not to trust him. It was while they were eating supper that Sam decided he had to do the right thing. He had to prove he was worthy of being their son. He would go to Lawler's. He'd go alone, and he would make them proud. He'd steal something. When dinner was over, Sam put on his coat and his boots and his hat, and he headed off into the night. He was terrified. He was excited. He felt scared. He felt alive. And he felt very grown up, very grown up. He would remember this night forever. It was his first crime. When he got to Lawler's, Sam walked up and down the aisles, past the razors and the soap, past the vitamins and the magazines and the jars of lotions, and he realized there was one major flaw in his plan. He had no plan. He had no idea what he was going to steal, and then he saw the beauty counter, and he knew what he wanted to take. He wanted to take lipstick for his mother. She'd like that. He imagined bringing it home. He imagined calling his mom and dad into the kitchen. And he imagined holding out the tube of lipstick in the palm of his hands. "I stole it," he'd say. And they'd be so proud of him. They would say they'd been dreaming of this day all their lives. They would hug him, and then they would tell him everything. They would start taking him on jobs, and he'd be really good at it. And one night he'd be in the car with his dad, and they'd be driving home after hitting a bank or something. And his dad would say, "We never did anything this big before you. I don't know how we got along without you." Sam picked up the tube closest to him and he took off the cap. It was an electric shade of red. So bright Sam blinked, it reminded him of the light on top of a police car. And he put it back quickly. The next tube was a deeper shade of red, a dark reddish brown that reminded him of dried blood. Then he picked up a third tube, and so he was holding two tubes, the dried blood and the one called Forbidden Passion. And he put them down. Who was he fooling? He couldn't steal. Even if his family were hardened criminals, he wasn't. And Sam went home empty-handed. And on the long, empty-handed walk home, he tried to figure things out. The whole thing was too complicated to see clearly, too messed up. He walked the long way, went in the arena and put a quarter in the machine in the lobby and got a handful of M&Ms. That helped. And he decided if he couldn't do the best thing, at least he could prevent the worst. The worst thing would be for his mother to get arrested. When he got home, everything seemed so normal. His dad was playing solitaire on the computer. His mom was lying on the couch with a box of Kleenex. And Sam took off his boots and he hung his hat on a hook by the door and he went into the kitchen and poured some juice and drank it. And then he went into the living room and he crawled up onto the sofa with his mom. She tousled his hair like she did in the morning before he left for school. Who would do that if she went to jail? Who would wake him with a kiss? Who would tell him to watch out for traffic? Sam had to buy some time. At least until he could handle all that stuff by himself. He had to round up the stuff his mother had stolen and he had to return it to Lawler's. And he'd have to do it without anyone knowing. Easier said than done. He ran home from school the next afternoon. He figured he had an hour. He figured that would be more than enough time. But once Sam began to scour the house, everything began to look dubious to him. The new DVD player, for instance. Pair of jeans David brought home on the weekend. The scatter rug in the hall. Arthur's new leash. A bag of salt and pepper potato chips. The toaster. And then a horrifying thought. The very clothes that he was wearing. Of course, that was the afternoon his father came home early. And there was Sam halfway up the stairs on his way to his bedroom with a toaster under his arm, wearing nothing but his Batman underwear. Try to explain that to your father. And his room was stuffed with stuff. Give your head a shake, he said to himself when he'd finally gotten rid of his father. Told him it was a science experiment. This is ridiculous, he told himself. He had to reduce the loot to the least common denominator. He returned everything to its place except for the six small items he saw his mother put in her pocket at Lawler's. The problem was everything had been already used. If Sam was going to get this stuff back on the shelves, he was going to have to make everything look new again. The lip gloss was the smallest, so he began with the lip gloss. Came in a miniature tub with a screw lid, and the tub seemed to be full, but the surface bore the telltale sign of his mother's fingerprints. He needed to smooth it off. He touched it tentatively with his own finger, but that only made it worse, so he tried again, this time wearing a yellow rubber glove he found under the bathroom sink. But the glove made his finger too big. He tried to obliterate his fingerprints by wrapping his finger in saran wrap. That didn't work either. The lip gloss was lime green. Finally, Sam took a tube of Stephanie's hair gel and filled the tub of lip gloss to the brim, and he smoothed it off like plaster with a knife. Looked a bit full, but it didn't look used. He topped off the shampoo with dish soap. The conditioner with some of his mother's hand cream. The tube of toothpaste was easy. He put his lips around the opening and blew into it. It popped right back into shape. He found the cardboard box in the bathroom garbage, and he used super glue from his father's workbench to glue it shut. He rinsed the toothbrush off and recovered its box, and he sealed it up too, forgetting to dry the brush off, and doing such a good job resealing the container that the toothbrush stayed damp for the 3 days it hung on the rack at Lawler's, was still damp and tasting vaguely of toothpaste when Greta Lobeer bought it and brought it home and stuck it in her mouth. The toothbrush was the last thing that Sam got back onto the racks. Doug Lawler, who thought Sam seemed peculiar moving around the store the way he was, had his eye on him, and finally he asked Sam to show him what he had in his bulging pockets. And of course, Sam had no receipts. No receipts for what he had in his pockets, and what could he say? He couldn't tell Doug Lawler he was returning stuff. Doug made him empty his pockets, and Sam lined up the toothpaste and the shampoo and the conditioner and the lip gloss on Doug's desk one by one. And he started to cry, of course, and Doug didn't know what to do with him. He liked Sam, and damned if he didn't start to get teary himself when he asked Sam if he was ever going to steal again, and in a very small voice, Sam said no. Instead of phoning the police, Doug Lawler phoned Morley. "We have a bit of a problem," he said. When Morley got there, Doug left the two of them alone, and Sam told her, he told her everything. "I never stole anything," he said. "I was putting it back." When Morley finally understood, she reached out and pulled Sam to her. "I was wondering what was bothering you." Sam said, "Oh, I've never stole anything either, you know," said Morley. "Never," said Sam. "Never," said Morley. "But I think a lot of people do, maybe just once or twice." "Why?" said Sam. I don't know," said Morley. "Maybe because they're feeling sad. Maybe because they think no one loves them and they deserve to or something. I think your dad took some things when he was a boy. We'll ask him at supper. He'll tell you about his life of crime." On the way out of the store, Morley saw Doug Lawler and she stopped to tell him what had happened. But Sam didn't notice her stop, and he kept walking past the vitamins and the cold medicines and past the paper towels and the toilet paper where Morley had been standing when he spotted her. And when Sam realized he was walking alone, he stopped and he looked around. And when he couldn't see his mother anymore, he felt a rush of anxiety. But then, just like the first time, he spotted her in the big mirror at the end of the aisle. Except this time she was walking towards him. And this time he felt a wave of relief when he saw her. It was perfect. And part of him wanted to keep her in this view forever, where he could see her and she couldn't see him. To have his mother hovering over him the way she was hovering now in the mirror, there, but not quite there, so he could see her whenever he needed to. Thank you very much.
That was Stuart McLean, and that's from the Vinyl Cafe. You can hear that story again on the brand new Vinyl Cafe CD, Vinyl Cafe Storyland. Stuart McLean and the Vinyl Cafe will be hitting the road in a couple of days. They'll be bringing the annual Christmas concert tour to Sarnia, Vancouver, Victoria, Calgary, Banff, Edmonton, Regina, Barrie, Toronto, London, Hamilton, Kitchener, Ottawa, and Ogdensburg, New York. In the spring, Stuart McLean will be taking the Vinyl Cafe to Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, Prince Edward Island, and Maine. They'll be making stops in Charlottetown, Miramichi, Fredericton, St. John, Moncton, Port Hawkesbury, Glace Bay, Truro, Wolfville, Halifax, and Orno in Portland, Maine. You can check the website for all the details, vinylcafe.com.
For more on all of our CBC podcasts, head to cbc.ca/podcasting.